Hello and welcome to our 18th episode of Double DM Podcast. With me today is, as usual, Emil. How are you today?
Hello. I'm a little bit hyperactive now. I don't know why, but I am.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but yeah. Today we have an awesome guest coming up talking about our topic today. But first, did anything special happen in your week?
Well, I think that we have a giveaway now is pretty damn rad.
Mm-hmm.
So, for the giveaway, if you want to participate, by listening, you don't really participate, but you contribute to the prize pool because, first of all, you can participate on our Twitter or on our Instagram. There we have a link to a GiveLab giveaway where you can complete some tasks which are pretty easy, like following us on Twitter or Instagram, which you should already do if you listen to this. But now we are basically making that for the giveaway. So if you are participating in the giveaway, you have the chance of winning one of three amazing looking dice sets, handmade sharp edge resin dice. They look amazing. You have winner will get to choose between one of the three. And if we make it to 500 listens by the end of the giveaway, which is the 25th of June, we will give away a second dice set of those three. So we will draw two winners. So just by listening to this, what I'm just saying, you are contributing to maybe increasing your chance of winning dice. And yes, who doesn't love that?
I mean, we're all dice goblins here. Am I right?
Yeah.
Math rocks make click-like noises. We like that. Yeah. I had my first corona vaccine shot last Friday. I was a little excited about that, but nothing too major. But yeah. It just hurt a little the day after on the spot where they, I can't speak, where they gave me the shot, but that's just normal for a vaccine, I think.
So you're one of the people that already has one shot down and one other to go. I missed a chance to get one for a D&D session. So talking about commitment, but not only... I didn't really miss a chance because I live in a district of Berlin where they wanted to vaccinate some people of a specific block. They did not get all vaccines out, and before those run out and you would have to throw them away because of procedures and laws, they said, hey, everyone that wants, that is over 21 years old, I think, lives in this district I live in, can get a shot. We have 900 doses. You need, and you had the possibility to line up at like at 9 a.m. The problem being, if I would line up and it would take more than 2 hours, I would have missed my D&D session on Sunday. Mm. And I didn't want to do that. But probably when the next time of that comes, because I know there will be a second time of this probably coming in the next in the near future, I will definitely get my first shot, even without any appointments, which is pretty good.
Yeah, but I'm glad that they are doing this right now, because at the beginning we threw away millions of doses of vaccine because nobody was or they weren't vaccinating fast enough, those people who were allowed to get a vaccine, so they had to throw away because of the best by date, basically. Best before they date, that would be the right thing.
So coming back to something else, social media thing, I have hit 2,000 followers on Twitter yesterday, which
congratulations.
I did not expect. I did not expect that, I have to say.
Yeah, but that's a huge milestone.
That's a freaking huge milestone. I'm when this airs, this is already late news. I will do an AMA just something I will do. See what comes of it. I don't know. Something nice. I think I could be fun. Basically giving people the option of asking me anything. Yeah.
Yeah, and we had the Witcher session.
Yeah.
And next one.
Yeah, we did.
It was a wild one. Yeah.
So, wait, let me start. We left off at this point where one of the characters, the human bard, Layla, was marked by something that is called a returner, which forces you to sleepwalk into the forest and never return from there. And you bound her to the bed so she couldn't sleepwalk and then went to sleep. The Witcher then woke up. And, well, Layla wasn't there anymore in her bed. So, that is where we started this session. How was it for you?
Hella confusing at first, but then scary as shit. Because, turns out, the Witcher was still sleeping and had a dream that Layla was gone.
He was sleepwalking, too.
Yeah, he was sleepwalking as well. Then he tried to wake me up, but my character did wake up, but not in his dream. It's a little complicated. When I woke up, I saw the Witcher without any sort of facial expression. Looking at some things on the ground before Layla's bed, which was empty, but then I looked over to the Witcher's bed where Layla did sleep in. Weirdly. I then tried to wake the bard up, which didn't work for my perspective. But for the bard's perspective, it did.
Just then, that you didn't wake up the bard in the Witcher's bed, but in the bard's bed. Because exactly, she never moved from her place.
Exactly, where she was still tied to the fucking bed. She then proceeded to witness some sort of fight between my character, the mage, and the Witcher. Or at least I bonked him or so. And casted a gust of wind, some sort of displacement air magic spell. And shattered his brain and head across the whole room. At least in my vision. Yeah. But then sooner or later when we all left, somehow we left the room, woke up in our beds. But there were some repercussions from our dreams in the real world in our room. Yeah, and this was the time where it got fucking scary. Because now somehow dreams can become reality. I don't know. I am fucking terrified, but so is my character. So, hey, oh, man, it was a great session. And then we forgot some information we had and beefed some rolls, forget to prepare correctly, and yeah, that's just basic TTRPG stuff, I think. And regarding basic TTRPG stuff, I had a session as well, kind of in that direction, because my players in the 7-player group started fighting a Yeti, or fighting in a Yeti lair, because they were trying to find a missing person. The fight was pretty close, but awesome. They used the terrain cool and stuff, but then somehow terrorized this small baby Yeti thing. Because when it fell from the ceiling, because they shot the mother, it broke both of his legs. And in front of its eyes, they began to skin and forage those adult Yetis, and now they have adopted it and are carrying it with them. kind of Stockholm syndrome-y, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's about as interesting as it gets for my week.
I've had the session for that I missed my COVID, the possibility to get a COVID vaccine this week. I had a meta session with my players, which
yes,
was
you talked about it.
Them ordering all the information that they got because there was some messy stuff in there and we wanted to clear this up. So we had a session where they basically talked just with each other about their notes, with more or less in character and out of character. I didn't really care at that point. And yeah, basically I said, I'm going to answer every question you ask truthfully or not answer at all. I will not lie to you. I will give you the information you should have gotten. And all the questions you have will be answered, except if your characters wouldn't know the answer to that question. So that my players have the knowledge of their characters. They also had this Google Doc document where they basically wrote everything down together. So now they have a common basis they work in. And I told them after that, now you can go through this, ask yourself questions. Those are questions you need to answer, right?
Yeah. So you would say it was a success, this meta session you did?
Yeah, I think it was a good success. I don't really think that this is something you should do. It's not something I would recommend because I fixed, my opinion, a mistake I did and my players did mistakes. So we all did mistakes at the table and we fixed those mistakes so we can enjoy the game because that's the most important part. As long as everyone's having fun, nobody should care how you play your game.
Exactly.
The thing is, I wouldn't recommend this because it was basically us just clearing up mistakes. And you, obviously, I only recommend this if you do the same mistakes that we did, which was my players not getting ready for a campaign that involves political intrigue and information gathering, and me not making that clear enough for my players and not giving them the information. I gave them the information, but I didn't make it clear enough that information is important for them. They just they saw some sort of cultist walking down a hallway. Okay, he had this special emblem I described. And my players, okay, yes, special emblem, he's special. Let's kill him. But they didn't know that the special emblem means something they should have known before because they never paid attention to that. And I should have made them pay more attention to it. So, yeah, it was a lot of messed up stuff and then us clearing this up. So if you feel like, I can say if you feel like that your campaign is sort of feeling a little wrong is off the tracks, let's say that, then have a session where you talk with your players about where you got off track, if that even is the case. Again, communication is important. Just talk to the people. It will work. It worked for us, and it will work for most of you. Just talking to people will clear most mistakes in-game up. And they did that, and now they have a pretty good basis, which I am very happy with. They forgot some information I gave them completely, which I now scratched more or less, and will bring up again through some other way. That I will bring back up, but every information that they have some sort of information on but didn't quite have written down, they now have. So they basically have this fully bulletproof basis now that they can now start building up from again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that happens.
Regarding how you can play your games, this perfectly links into our today's topic because we are again talking about how to enhance your game, like we did already with Eli and music and ambience. But today we talk about battle maps with Eric from Maps and Quests. which and he will be here with us shortly. So, welcome back. With us is now our guest, Eric from Maps and Quests. So, would you like to introduce yourself? Who are you? What do you do? How did you get into TTRPGs? All that kind of stuff.
Hi, thanks, guys. So, I'm Eric, also known on Twitter as Maps and Quests or Mappy McMapface. I make combat and encounter maps for Dungeons & Dragons and other tabletop role-playing games, typically in a more fantasy medieval style. Got into TTRPGs got a long time ago, back in the early 90s, with D&D 2E. Been playing, DMing, GMing on and off ever since. Got into map making primarily because the party that I am DMing for right now likes to get really, really, really tactical with how they do things in combat. And I just had a hard time finding a lot of maps out there that were big enough to do kind of how they like to do combat. And that's really where I started making maps. Then my players eventually at one point come and said, you know, these are actually pretty good. You could probably like sell these and make some money. And I basically said, you're all crazy. Make an intelligence saving throw against insanity, please. And that's basically how it got started. Started actually selling them, quote unquote, back in late December. Didn't actually start really making any money off of it until February. And even now that money's not a lot, but it's more than zero, which is, last I checked, a good thing. So,
I mean,
definitely a good balance.
I can say my players love your maps. I have used two of them already, which they really enjoyed, because I also create the maps for them, obviously, for the rest of the combats, but they do not look as good as yours, and every time I pull out one of yours, it's my players really enjoying the way they can move around this very big, large map. They can really get into also the tactical aspect, because they also like to do this little tactics thing where they really have their own way of working the combat. Like, many people just want combat to be done quick and get over with it, but they really engineer every way they can attack. They calculate more or less how they which enemy would be the best to attack now. Obviously, they don't do any calculations with the calculator at the table, but they sit there and think about who's the best enemy to attack, who if they should move two spaces back, if they should move forward, if they, yeah. And your maps really, really work with that style, because they are so big. They have the freedom to really look around and play that tactical style they want to play.
Thank you. I'm glad you're getting good usage out of the maps. And that's really kind of how I try and design and set them up, is so that your more tactical play style can come through. Because one of the limitations that I saw when I was, you know, trying to find maps for my home game that I run is, so let's say my cleric, for example, who has the spell sniper feat, who can now hit with spells that have an attack roll at 240 feet away. If you're playing on, you know, a map that's 20 by 20 grid, you're not even remotely in a position where they can take advantage of that. And that's just kind of one of those limiting factors I saw in why I started making these really big maps. Or if you have somebody who does something really crazy and game breaking, like a warlock who takes Eldritch Spear and Spell Sniper and a couple levels in Sorcerer for meta magic, and can now snipe things 1,200 feet away with Eldritch Blast. Granted, I don't even know if some of my maps can get you out to 1,200 feet necessarily. Some of them can, but
1,200 feet, that's a lot of distance.
Yeah.
For an Eldritch Blast. That's insane.
What I, for example, really like about your maps are especially the maps of villages or cities you have, where you have several houses or several like market stands. For example, I remember you had this one market map which I used already, where you had several shops down. Because normally, if you look for market battle maps, you find like one or at maximum two houses, but those just really don't work if you have like a chase through several streets in the city and they finally get a clear shot of the enemy and then they shoot and then they dart back into an alley and then you go after chasing after them again. And if you only have this one house battle map, basically you are limited to just playing in that house, because if your heroes run, if the enemies and the heroes or adventurers run out of this house, you need a new battle map. Yours are this big overview of this whole marketplace or whatever, so they can really play with that again. The maps are great.
thank you. And yeah, that's one of those things where I look at it from a tactic standpoint, as you know, the dungeon master or game master, if you will, as well, where you're really, really smart enemies aren't necessarily going to stand and fight to the death if they realize that they're up against, you know, an overwhelming force or against a group of heroes or adventurers, if you will, that they're not going to win against. They're probably not going to stand and fight to the death. They're probably going to try and get away. So you need space for that to happen too. Which sometimes on the smaller maps you just don't see.
Yeah, definitely. We should move on to our little fun mini game, which Nils is gonna do this time.
Yeah. So we prepared three German lyrics for you. The first one would be "Komm mit mir ins Abenteuerland auf deine eigene Reise."
Come to the toilet and forget the riser.
Come was right, at least.
I told you, German's not my best language, not by any stretch.
That's totally fine. But the song would be Abenteuerland from Pur, and it would translate roughly to "Come with me to the land of adventurers on your own journey."
Mm.
Somewhat like that.
Yeah, come with me to the land of adventure and create your own story. Perfectly fitting for fantasy or not even fantasy, but TTRPGs in general. Perfect. I never thought about that before.
And something slightly fitting as well would be the second one, which would be "Oh Johnny, warum hast du kein Gewissen?"
Oh Johnny, come to Valheim. Something, something, something. Oh Johnny, come to Valheim and see something, I think. I don't know.
Well, it goes a little more on the translation would be, "Oh Johnny, why do you have no conscience?"
Talking about a murder regarding... hobby
player. Exactly. And it would be from Jan Delay and would be called "Oh Johnny," the song. Are you ready to move on to the last one?
Sure, yeah. Sure. Show you more of my lack of knowledge.
Before we move on, I have a pretty perfect joke because of Jan Delay, because his brother is called Günther Realtime. Ah, silence. Mm,
the pain. The pain. Oh man.
Okay, let's move on to the third. Oh. Forget what I said.
I do love how puns are universal regardless of language, though. Yeah. Everyone makes puns.
Yeah, it's I love him, but
no,
it
you
kind
actually
hurts.
Hate me. I know that.
I hate you, but I still love him, and you, but different topic. So the last one would be "Lass die anderen sich verändern und bleib so wie du bist."
Lusty barmaid, bring me something. I don't know.
So, the translation would be let the others change and stay who you are. A little melancholic rap song from the German artist Motrip called So Wie Du Bist, or As You Are, or Who You Are.
But I think it should have been about a barmaid bringing someone a beer or something.
Definitely, I should have checked for more songs regarding that. to have a topic in all three lyrics regarding TTRPGs. But yeah, I think we should go on with the topic of today's
podcast. Yeah, so Eric, podcast. Very easy question, and I think nearly everyone listening knows this, but just for those that don't, what are battle maps or combat encounter maps in TTRPGs, and what are they used for? Because we talked already about them, but what exactly are they?
Yeah, so a battle map or an encounter map, if you will, whichever phraseology you want to use there, is used in TTRPGs specifically to set the scene for a specific encounter, to give you a visual aid for where pieces, if you will, are on the board. Actually, harken back to the old war games that were popular back in the 50s and 60s, which is kind of where modern TTRPGs as we know them kind of evolved out of those. So that you have a better idea, tactically and that sort of thing on the board, where the bad guys are, where you are, where your party members are, that sort of thing, to give you a visual representation. And then they're used then as a canvas of sorts for you to tell the story of that particular battle or encounter. Because not every encounter, so to speak, needs to be combat per se. But that's a whole other TTRPG theory discussion.
Yeah. But that discussion is actually something we will talk about later, I think. We will bring that back up because what I realized is if I pull out a battle map, my players are actually more inclined to fight than when I don't.
See, and that's interesting. I think there is an almost, from a lot of players, there's an almost Pavlovian response to, when they see a map come up, that means that there's going to be a fight. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Through, especially for people who've been playing for years and years and years and years and years, that you see a map, that means there's going to be a fight. And part of that's just because, for me at least, running combat via theater of mind, my brain just doesn't function that way. I know we were going to talk about theater of mind at some point today anyway, but my brain just doesn't function that way for running combat. Keeping all those things straight in a visual map in my head. But
yeah, it's so easy to forget something combat related if you don't have a visual aid where you can piece all those, where you can place all those pieces together and keep track of where is who is where and what distances and what elevation and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's way easier with a battle map, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we talked about this already a bit, but what is, in your opinion, a good battle map and how important are they?
So, how important they are, I think, really depends on the individual table. The combination of dungeon master and players and play style and how those things come together are really going to influence how important they are at that individual table. I know for me, they're really important because, as I mentioned, my brain just doesn't run combat in theater of mind. I've tried and my brain just kind of stalls out. So, as far as what kind of makes a good combat or encounter map, in my mind, one, it has to, look good. That visual presentation piece is important, as far as, how it actually looks. Does it convey, a certain time of day? Did the pieces fit together? That sort of thing. And another kind of hallmark, I think, of a good combat or encounter map is that there's interesting things going on the map, be that trees to provide cover, or walls to block sight, or ledges that, your heroes might have to scale or jump down, or boulders they could try and push on an enemy, or that the enemy could try and push onto them. So I've seen that happen both ways. The old rocks fall, everyone dies joke from forever ago in D&D. And then the other thing I think from, a good combat or encounter map, how I view it, as a consumer and maker of maps as well, is that I need general usability out of the map, where it's not so specific to a locale or a specific environment that there's no way that I can use it in my campaign. Which I do see out there, and I don't want to, talk badly of any other map makers or anything like that, because we all have our strong suits and that sort of thing. But I think that's really one of the other hallmarks that frequently gets overlooked is the general usability of the map. Because I try and specifically design my maps at least where almost anyone can pick them up and pop them into almost any D&D or medieval slash fantasy game they're playing in the TTRPG space and be able to use it in that particular game. I know there was one of mine that, Emil, you had mentioned that was, I had actually designed it with kind of a Feywild feel to it, as a village, but you saw a different usage for it entirely for, I think, an arts district or something like that, which works too. So that's one of the other things I look at is making the maps detailed enough that they're good and usable, but also generic enough that I'm not saying, God, this map is beautiful. How the heck am I going to use it for my players?
Yeah, I think especially if you create maps obviously for the general public like you do and any other map maker do, usability of that map is pretty important because like when I create games for my home games, obviously I can make them as unique as I want, tailored to actually what I want because obviously I'm not gonna show them to anybody, but if you make maps in general for people, then this usability becomes a huge factor in what that map actually provides. Because you also said that a good map is more or less something that provides a complete environment. So walls, doors, floors that maybe you can fall through. Windows you can jump through and all that sort of stuff that makes combat really dynamic, which we talked about in our combat episode where we were like, combat needs to be somewhat dynamic because you can obviously play that old general JRPG style of combat. Everyone stands in a circle and goes after each other, hitting, jumping back to their position and going into an idle stance where they just wait for the next turn. Or this you have certain environmental factors like a fire spreading, and a battle map obviously gives the basis for that dynamic combat, in my opinion. So you can build this dynamic combat on there because then you have these walls you place. So you know here's an obstacle. Here, the players can't go through there. They need to go around or go through in some other way. And that really makes battle maps, in my opinion, good if they create a dynamic experience for everyone at the table.
Yeah, I think that is important, and it's important, not just for the players, but for the dungeon master as well. Just as an example, I had a map that I haven't actually released yet. It's in the back catalog to be released at some point in time. of an orphanage. I know you've seen one of the orphanage maps I made where there was a balcony on the second floor. And my party had been tipped off that that a cult that's stirring up problems in the region in my campaign was going to try and steal some stuff from the orphanage. And so one of my rogues decided he was going to kind of keep watch on that balcony. He rolled incredibly poorly on his stealth check to hide. And he happened to be seen by some of the cultists coming to the orphanage kind of through the back alley. And so I had the cult fanatic, who I'd homebrewed a little bit, try and cast sleep on the rogue. Unfortunately, I rolled all ones on those D8s for the sleep spell. But that's one of those things where if that sleep spell had actually worked and knocked that rogue out, then how that combat and encounter played out would have been completely different than how it actually did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's sort of the experience that makes TTRPGs in general unique. Like we talked about this with Hamilton, with Marco and Josh already, and now also you, that D&D or any TTRPG is a very dynamic experience.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that works with that dynamic way and supports this dynamic playstyle really helps the game flow, because what you don't want is a stop to your game, right? If your players right. are sitting there and like having to think for like 10 minutes on what actually to do and not doing anything, like if they do that in character, that's fine, that's part of the play if they make plans. But if your players are sitting there for 10 minutes not knowing what to do, that's just, I would say, wasted game time. And you don't want that to happen in any scenario, in either a battle map or when it comes to certain roleplay things, like with death. We talked with Marker about that. You never want there to be like wasted time for the players. So, maps, again, bringing that back to the maps, is you need to make the maps so that you can have that dynamic style again. They need to support that style. And if they do, like yours do, or at least the two that I use, and I'm pretty sure all the other ones do too, they do support that style and give me the opportunity to basically play around with them, because they are so... not so unique, like they are general, losing my words, they are general maps, so I can use them in many different situations, which gives me a dynamic way already. And I can obviously, with any virtual tabletop like Roll20 or Foundry, add effects that change the battle map altogether. Like I could basically set a house on fire that would create a whole new situation on that map and basically change the whole way the map is played.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm a huge fan from that, you know, dynamic standpoint of, you know, when I'm playing with my players, when my cleric is a light domain cleric, she's also the source of many, many good one-liners, but I digress. The light domain gets fireball as a domain spell.
Yeah.
I absolutely set things on fire when fireball lands near something flammable to change the dynamic of the map.
and regarding this fluent changing of battle maps and having to make a battle map that can fit those kind of styles, what was the hardest battle map you had to do yet or till up to this point? Or is there anything that you would consider that would be your hardest map you had to make?
So the hardest map that I've had to make is actually one I'm working on right now. It'll be releasing on my Patreon in a couple of weeks. And it is, for my players, it is the Athar Mage College, which is the source of a pun because it is by the sea, so they are the Wizards of the Coast. The little joke that I hide somewhere in the geography of all of my campaigns, there is a mage college on the sea who are known as the Wizards of the Coast. But it's a fairly large map. It is a 74 by 74 grid. Basically, circular walls in a keep with circular towers around the walls. There are 8 buildings, which are classrooms. Then there are another 16 that are dormitories. And then the central building, which has as its ground floor a dining hall with a kitchen. The next 2 floors up from that are a massive library, which I actually had to make a custom asset for, so that I could put bookshelves curving around the outer walls of the library as well. The next floor up from that is teachers' quarters / living spaces. And then the next few floors up from that are the Archmage's kind of personal tower. So all in all, it's going to be a 7-floor battle map, where you can, you know, use any of the floors as you kind of need to. Outside of that, the other super complicated map I made is actually for a streamer, Sigmani Academy, who, Emilia, I believe you're friendly with them on Twitter as well. To represent their school, kind of the central courtyard of their school and the dormitories off of those and the classrooms and that sort of thing. That was a 128 by 112 grid, absolute monstrosity of a map that they're going to get a lot of usage out of because it represents their school as a whole, which is where most of their stuff happens. And then underneath that, there are sewers, which they're going to do some stuff in. And then underneath that, there's a whole nother level that they haven't gotten to yet. So I don't want to, you know, be too spoilery on that in case any of their players listen to this.
Okay, yeah.
That sounds like a lot of detail. Insane.
Yeah, that map.
I kind of want to see it.
That map has a lot going on in it.
Like, both of those maps are, like, those are massive.
Yeah. That, wow.
I mean, you could call that Mage College a mega dungeon already, I think.
Yeah, 74 by 74 grid and 128. Wow. Wow. I'm literally missing my words here. It's insane how big those are.
That's a huge map.
And those are maps. One of the reasons on my Patreon to get into some technical stuff, why I generally stick in that 50 by 50, 40 by 60 grid range is because I've found when you go too much above that, your JPEG files, which are, you know, the core of your digital battle map, actually start getting too large to upload into Roll20. Roll20, even for paid accounts, has a 10 meg hard cap on file size for upload, and you start going much above those sizes, and you start exceeding that 10 meg cap very, very quickly.
Yeah, that upload limit, because I only use the free version, it's only 5 meg for me. That fucked me sometimes. Not for battle maps, at least not yet, but for overworld maps, which I use. Those were way too big, and I basically had to cut them into four pieces and upload those four pieces separately to actually get the whole map on there. So yeah, I can see how your big maps sometimes might go scratching at that limit.
Yeah, there's one map, which is one of my earlier ones. It's a 100x100 kind of forest crossing, if you will, which my players, there was a whole bandit encounter that happened there where they tried to bluff the bandits into believing that the Tabaxi rogue was the Kalashtar cleric's grandfather. There were a lot of failed deception checks.
That's a phrase you only hear in D&D.
Yes.
Yeah, but sounds like a fun story anyways.
But yeah, that 100x100 map, I actually had to downscale a little bit so it would actually fit into Roll20 and piece up. Just once you start getting into that size range, I do sometimes wind up having to, you know, split them into four pieces so that they're not exceeding that individual file size limit.
Yeah. So when creating battle maps, when you do that, what are, in your opinion, key pointers you have to pay attention to? So basically for anyone that's looking to start battle map making, what are your tips in actually making battle maps?
So the first is, one, have an idea. I know that probably sounds a little silly and simplistic, but pretty much all of my maps start as maps that my party is using or will be using eventually. So with that kind of in mind, if you will, so one, a lot of it is starting kind of with an idea for what's going to happen on this map or what could happen on this map. So for example, the village map that we spoke briefly about earlier, Emil, that actually led into a chase scene for my party where they discovered once again that pesky cult was planning to try and rob the royal vaults to get some documents in the royal vaults. It turned into a little bit of a chase scene with one of the cultists getting away. They cornered the cultists in a house, waited until nightfall, and then through a series of stunningly good deception checks, convinced the cult that they needed to flee town because there were werewolves on the loose. Which that encounter went nowhere near how I'd planned it, but as I'm fond of saying, you can't railroad the party if there are no rails, so to speak. So a lot of it is just kind of starting with that idea of what could possibly happen here. And then as you're making it, just try and think of things that can make that combat more interesting or that encounter more interesting from a tactical standpoint. You know, where can I put walls that might create somewhere where a fiend could hide behind, or a werewolf or what have you could hide behind, or where one of the players might not see something on the other side of the wall, even if they're not actively trying to hide, or something that could give cover, that sort of thing. So a lot of it is kind of starting with that idea of what could possibly happen on this map. And then as you're building it up, think of ways where it could be made more challenging. The map that I released on Monday, that particular map pack with the rapids and the broken bridge going over them and the ruined village on the other side of the rapids, was thinking of, okay, well, the party's going to need to go here to investigate something in this village, but how can I make getting into the village somewhat challenging for the party? Okay, well, there's a broken bridge where the gap is actually slightly too far for most characters to be able to jump that. So then there's the rocks down in the water that the, you know, they could try and get across, but that's probably going to require some dexterity checks, that sort of thing, to get across. So that's a lot of it, is you're trying to think of those ways where, how can this map be made in such a way that it can present challenges to the player, and to get them to, you know, think about the problem solving aspect of things, where you're not making it too challenging, but you're also not handing them the solution on a silver platter either.
So with that, you basically answered one point of our next question already, regarding what effects battle maps have on our games. Are there any positive and negative effects battle maps had on your games in the past?
Yeah, so as far as positive, obviously, they help a lot with player immersion. You know, kind of being there in that moment, being there where they can kind of see what's going on, get an idea of, you know, the trees and that sort of thing. Where they've created issues for me in the past are maps when I, you know, first, when I, before I started making my own, maps where there's, you know, a little too much detail, if that makes sense. A body wrapped in spider webs in the corner of a map. My party's like, "Oh my god, there are spiders!" And I'm like, "Ignore that. That's not actually part of this. Ignore the body in the spider webs." or having to, you know, kind of make up details on the fly, because my Tabaxi rogue has the habit of liking to climb up trees and try and stealthily jump from tree to tree to get the drop on the bad guys. Where, okay, well, how tall is that tree? Okay, and guesstimate and say 20 feet. A part of that's, you know, the improv aspect of being a dungeon master as well, of being able to just make things up on the spot that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Quick, for me, the big positive it actually gave my players is the single thing that they, like we already talked about in the beginning, they can now play really tactical. They can really start to think about their turns. They can more or less over-engineer them into certain aspects. What my players do is actually they create combos of their characters. So they know, okay, if I use this spell with and move to this space, I'm gonna basically make it very easy for a fighter to hit his three attacks in this round, use the action surge, and do it again. So I'm gonna do that. But the fighter is before him, so he holds his action. No, he doesn't hold his action because that only is one action. So he basically... So they combo that a little bit so they can actually do that. But in Theater of Mind, this does work too. But on the maps, they can really emphasize on this aspect that they plan their combats ahead of time, because they get tactical and they also play that part. They in game shout commands at each other, that which are the reason why I actually let them do this, because a lot of combats, this is going back to the combat part, a lot of people just don't communicate in combat. And I think that's just wrong, because normally you communicate, probably communicate every, you would communicate like every one or two turns with each other, giving information, because just yesterday I was in a combat where we were ambushed by people, and my archer saw someone from another side of the combat field running towards us. So I screamed at our rogue, "Turn around, you now go hit that person. So that he isn't, so he won't be surprised if that person actually crashes into him while he is still fighting someone else." So those maps somewhat gave my players the option to communicate, because they had a common ground they saw. There wasn't everyone had his own imagination of the map. They all had the same image, so they could communicate on a basis with each other. And that really gave them the opportunity to work together in combats and communicate and strategize and basically make combats a lot more interesting for us, but also harder for me to balance, because sometimes they have these combos or strategies that basically destroy the whole challenge rating of a game, and I have to throw 3 adult black dragons at them so that it actually works what I want to do with them.
Yeah, and so me, when I'm the dungeon master, my dice rolls are terrible when I'm running a game. Absolutely terrible. So my party frequently gets encounters that by CR rating would be deadly, because I know that, one, my dice rolls are historically terrible. I can't hit the broadside of a barn. You know, I throw something that has 3 attacks per round at my party, and I'm likely missing on 5 of those 6 attacks. So so there's that. And then there's also, on the off chance that my dice are rolling well that night, I can always scale things down. That is in your purview as the dungeon master to fudge dice rolls if necessary.
That's true. That's definitely true. I've done that sometimes.
Yeah, I had to do that last session as well, because otherwise we might have a TPK, and that's, yeah, maybe you should avoid something like that in this second or third session of a whole campaign, which is supposed to go to level 10, and they are level 2, that's a bit...
So you just created characters, you have your backstories early, and let's do it again!
Yes, exactly. So, do you guys have any way to minimize the negatives and maximize the positives? And if yes, how would you do it?
Yes. The big negative we already talked about was that my players sometimes think they have to fight a combat because there is a map. And I minimize that by basically only pulling out the map if I, as the DM, describe an attack going at my players, going against my players, or my players saying, I start combat, I start hitting. So only when I say roll initiative, I will actually change to battle map, because then we are in a situation where there is no real going back to saying, no, I actually didn't want to hit him. There has now been a hit. Obviously, if my players still want to try to talk their way out of this, this is still possible. But now I'm going to pull out the map, because there is a big chance that we are now having a combat. Maybe to death, or to some certain condition is met, whatever. But only if basically the words are told... If I say roll initiative, then I'm going to switch to a battle map. That way my players are never really inclined to fight before we actually start fighting.
So, and how I combat that is actually a little bit different, I think, in that I use maps a lot. Obviously, I make them, so I've got a lot of maps to use. but I whip out maps for everything. On the Market District map that you're describing, Emil, the only combat that has ever happened in my game on that map, and we've used that map a couple of times for shopping trips for the party, is up in the top left-hand corner of that map. There is a building that I specifically designed to be like kind of like an underground fighting pit, fight club type of thing, where my fighter goes and, you know, does prize fighting. He's the party's moneymaker from that standpoint. He goes and fights. The cleric goes and bets the farm on him, and hopefully he wins. So I frequently combat that by overusing maps, where, hey, you guys are just traveling through the woods, here's a town, what are you doing? You stopping to talk to anybody, or you're passing on through? to try and kind of break that Pavlovian response to seeing a map and thinking, oh my god, there's combat happening.
Yes, I can see that actually working too, but then again, I would need to have enough maps for that.
Right.
That's basically the one problem I see with that. I have also used basically just layouts of dungeons without any combat in them, but I still saw that that was actually the moment I realized how I want to do this whole thing of not using combat maps or these really gridded maps for my players to sit on, because the whole dungeon, normally if they enter a dungeon, they are obviously cautious. But this time they were really on the edge of their seats, waiting for an enemy to be around the corner. Yes, the characters might be that way, but my players, really saw a change in their behavior going through this dungeon when I had a gridded full map, a fully fledged map of this dungeon for them. And that's when I realized either I'm gonna go the route of what you said, throw so many maps at them that they realize not every map is combat, or minimize my maps. And we can both say both work. At least I guess yours works too.
Yeah, it does. And my party has actually adopted, because apparently nobody in my party except for the fighter made charisma their dump stat. that a lot of times if they have something in front of them that looks like it's going to be combat, they try and find a way to avoid it. Because they've also figured out, because we could get into the whole debate of XP versus milestone and all that other fun stuff, that even if it's something that could be a fight, if they manage to talk their way out of it, I still award XP for that.
Yeah, I do too. Wait, there are people that don't do that?
There are.
Oh my god.
It's a very old school D&D thing. Only awarding XP for combat. But my party's figured out, oh, hey, we don't have to fight to get XP. We don't have to, you know, use our limited resources to get XP. We can, you know, try and sneak around this potential combat, which they've done a couple of times. We could try to talk our way out of it, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, depending on how the dice are treating them that particular night. But...
Yeah, I think just awarding XP for killing stuff isn't the way to go usually, but clearing encounters in any shape or form would be the best way, I think.
Yeah.
Because it sparks creative thinking about how we can solve a situation other than just brute force.
Yeah, absolutely. I awarded my party bonus XP very early on at one point. They came across... Well, they tracked down the cultists to kind of this camp / training camp that they had. And the cultists had 8 guard dogs, using the Mastiff statistic from the monster manual. And they decided that it wouldn't be in character for any of them to outright attack the guard dogs. So they spent an hour... kind of luring each guard dog away with some successful animal handling checks from my cleric, and basically stole all of the cult's guard dogs.
And usual party protocol would say that they have to adopt those dogs, probably.
Yes, so they adopted the dogs and then party. Donated the dogs to an orphanage.
yeah. As you do.
Yeah, so we talked already in the beginning about theater of mind and battle maps. So sometimes I feel like a lot of people make them mutually exclusive. Like a lot of stuff in TTRPGs is made mutually exclusive, or at least it feels that way. Is that actually the case?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I know, for example, I know one person on Twitter who is actually one of my patrons who doesn't put battle maps in front of his players, but he's a patron of a map maker. And you think to yourself, well, that's kind of weird. What he actually uses my maps for, because he runs everything Theater of Mind, is he uses my maps for himself for kind of a personal guide for where everyone is on the map and where everything falls, that sort of thing. So I don't think they are mutually exclusive or even necessarily need to be mutually exclusive. Because you can play with both, you can play with either or. It really comes down to, once again, as I said earlier, kind of the play style of that dungeon master combined with the play styles of those players, which is where I think every table is different from that standpoint, as far as how those things get used.
You already said, you don't normally run Theater of Mind combats.
Right. And it just, my brain just doesn't process that terribly well. So even if I had players who, preferred Theater of Mind, I could still use a map as kind of a visual guide for myself for running that combat, if I so chose. If we take an example of, a dungeon master to use Matt Mercer as an example, in his famousness, if you will, that he kind of hybridizes the two if you watch Critical Role. He does use both. Now, his maps are frequently, just literally sketched out on graph paper type of thing, your presentation size paper, but it works.
Yeah, it does.
Clearly, it works, but.
For example, there's also I think Theater of Mind combat works for me only under like a certain set of conditions, and that is basically the scale of the combat. So if my players are in a tavern and this is just one room, like a few tables, a few patrons, a few beers on the table, and their weapons and some enemies, then I can run that in the Theater of Mind because it's only this room. The combat will basically never go out of this room necessarily. But if I really have to run a map, then it's mostly combat that is really where I can't really predict the scale, and I don't want to basically have to think about this too long for my players to. So it's, again, keeping the game in a fluent style so it doesn't stagnate in any way. But if I'm just in one room, that's for me mostly Theater of Mind if I don't have a specific map for that. Basically, any combat that my players surprise me with that I never plan for obviously is Theater of Mind because I don't have a backlog of like 100 maps I can just throw at them. I have normally a general forest map I create as soon as they use the last one, which I can just throw up. But if they are in a specific tavern with specific people in it, I'm not prepared for that combat. No
Yeah.
dungeon master probably is.
Yeah, it's like when I've started getting better prepared on, because the only combats that tend to be more impromptu in my games, just because my party has the habit of talking, they're trying to talk their way out of everything, which I'm perfectly okay with, are the ones where they do pit fighting, because every now and then, and I can never predict when it will be, one of the rogues will decide that they want to do pit fighting too. So, and then they're like, oh, are there 2v2 fights where the two rogues can take on somebody, or one of the rogues and the fighter can take on somebody? Those are the ones that I'm generally not super prepared for, because they spring those on me at complete random. So I'm like, okay, let me just see what I can piece together here real quick that would be a appropriate challenge rating just from what I have memorized from the monster manual. Okay, here we go. It might wind up being something, you know, reskinned. Like I took a Measle, which is one of my favorite monsters because of the auto grapple on the hit. And the subsequent, if you don't try and break the grapple on your next turn, you immediately take 2d6 damage from their garrote. I have just reskinned that as somebody who, you know, has a whip or nunchucks or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So, Niels.
Yeah. And you said you you were making the Wizards of the Coast map, let's call it that. You had to create a specific asset for mm-hmm. that map yourself. And what type of tools do you use for your creation or battle map creation?
So for battle map creation, I use a combination of Dungeon Draft and GIMP. I'm not rich enough to afford Photoshop. And unfortunately, my license on that expired, and I chose not to renew it because I can do pretty much everything I need to do in GIMP. It just might need a few extra steps. So I actually used GIMP for that. So a lot of that is hand-drawn. Unfortunately, we don't have a space here to show the people that. But what I created with that is, in Dungeon Draft, it's called a path, which paths are basically, as the name implies, long repeating objects that look kind of like a path. So with that, I used GIMP. It wound up being a total of between the layers that each of the books were created on individually and the shelves, it wound up being a total of 91 layers, which is a term that's interchangeable between Photoshop and GIMP, where I kind of hand drew the shelves, filled the shelves in with a pattern, hand drew the books, filled those in with various colors and patterns. And now you have a very, very long way to make bookshelves in any shape you want, basically. Because one of the things that I wanted there, because this particular college obviously has, it's a mage college, has one of the largest libraries in existence in my homebrew world. So I now have a way to make a circular bookshelf going all around the outer wall of the library because it's in a large circular central building.
Okay, that probably comes in very handy for later maps if you need to create bookshelves again.
Yes. So it's something that will definitely get usage elsewhere as well. But for this particular map, it was literally, I could not find anything in existence to do what I wanted it to do. So I made it.
I made it myself. That's normally the probably best way you can do something. If you don't find it, make it yourself.
Yeah, and it's basically bringing us back to the beginning where you said you couldn't find the maps you that were doing the stuff you needed them to do, so you started making your own.
Yeah.
Basically, we've come full circle. Like that mage tower you do, because that one's also wrong, because it's a tower, right?
Yes, yeah.
Boom! Fantasy cliché! No,
obviously, a perfectly round Archmage's tower, yeah.
Because we are approaching the 1 hour mark on our recording, it's about time to wrap this up. So, to quickly summarize, your tips for actually creating battle maps is have a general idea of what your map is supposed to achieve and what combat is supposed to be run on it. And think of challenges that map provides for your players and also, obviously, the enemies on that map that make the combat more interesting than just simple A hits B, B hits C, and C hits A again.
Right, exactly. Just to make it so that it's not that, you know, just, I don't want to say boring, because some people, you know, enjoy that style of combat. For me, it's boring, at least, of, you know, just stand up, swing at each other combat.
Yeah. and you use the programs Dungeon Draft and GIMP for making the dungeon, the maps.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dungeon Draft is not free. That's around $20 if I...
Yeah, it is $20. I don't know whether Mega Sploot, who is the parent company of Dungeon Draft, who also makes Wonder Draft, will ever be increasing the price of it. I know they are still technically considering it as a beta product, even though it's much more polished now than it was 6 months ago. I know with Wonder Draft, which is their kind of world mapping program, it started out at the same price, and then they increased the price to $30 about a year later. So I don't know if they're going to do that with Dungeon Draft or not.
So you, for all the people listening to this, you heard it here first. Dungeon Draft may increase its price. This is also not any advice from someone, from an insider, because Eric only makes assumptions most of the time. So basically, this is a good breakdown of map making. I think I have actually gotten a little more insight into how to create better battle maps myself.
Yeah, I will definitely use those tips.
Yeah,
for my next battle map and upcoming campaigns.
Because sometimes I just open my dungeon or map making tool of choice and just say, okay, let's place a little happy tree there, which is fine. But then I don't really think about what actually that combat provides for the game I'm playing, and then I just have an unnecessary combat in my game, which I sometimes realize is not something I actually want to do anymore, to have so many unnecessary things in the game for my players. So yeah, this definitely helped, and I hope it helped anyone out there listening to this too, because Eric is, in my opinion, an industry professional when it comes to battle maps.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I've made money on them now, so I can call myself a professional. So
exactly. So, because we're coming to the end, Eric, what do you want to shout out before we sign off? Any social medias, your patrons, or anything you want to shout out, basically?
Yeah, so obviously we have, you know, my Twitter account where I post room temperature takes, the occasional hot take, which I've been told that those aren't actually hot takes for the most part. silly memes that pop into my head, and lots of previews of the maps. There's my Patreon, patreon.com/maps_n is in the letter N, underscore quests, QUESTS. Where you can find loads and loads of battle maps. I generally also release a free map of some sort every Friday. This Friday, there is a map releasing, which is a set of ruins in a jungle with a series of waterfalls and that sort of thing leading up to the ruins. I actually posted a preview of that on Twitter earlier today. And so if you want free maps, there are free maps on my Patreon. I currently have 27 or 28 free maps up there right now, if I recall correctly. I'm also starting to implement doing VTT, or virtual tabletop files, for patrons. For those who have, you know, like the paid subscriptions to Roll20 or using Foundry or something like that, to make the task of setting up your dynamic lighting a little bit easier. And then obviously I want to shout out, you know, the TTRPG family as a whole, for all of their wonderful love and support. You, Emil, all of the wonderful friends I've made there, Hamilton from Dragonstool, who I know has been on your program, Maka from Check These Out, who I know has been on your program, Hope from Hope for TTRPGs. I firmly believe I would not be where I am right now without the support of all of you wonderful, wonderful people.
Yeah, I definitely can attest to that. We wouldn't be anywhere near to where we are today if it wasn't for Hope server and Hope Twitter community and all the amazing people there. You can find us on Twitter with the @DoubleDMPod. That same goes for Instagram. We have a giveaway up right now, as soon as this episode airs, until running to the 25th of June, where you can win a dice set of your choice. You can see the choices in the giveaway when you go to our Twitter. It's in the pinned post. So this has been the whatever episode we're on, because I never really recollect.
18th.
Episode of Double DM Podcast. Thanks so much, Eric, for being here today and talking with us.
Thank you.
About this very amazing topic. Yeah, so that's all from us, and I think we will hear you on the next one, people. Bye-bye.
Definitely. Bye-bye.
Bye.